Hi, everybody. My name is Cameron Munter, and I'm the CEO and president of the East West Institute in New York City. I'd like to welcome you to another edition of EWI Podcast, where we take the opportunity to explore some of today's pressing global issues with leading thinkers, influencers, and analysts. As always, you're welcome to check out all of our podcast sessions available on our website at www.eastwest.ngo. Today, I have the pleasure to welcome one of my colleagues, a man I've known for some time. His name is Mike Morrell, an American intelligence analyst who served as deputy director of the Central Intelligence Agency, the CIA, as well as its acting director twice, first in 2011 and then from 2012 to 2013. He is currently a senior counselor to Beacon Global Strategies, a strategic advisory group specializing in international policy and defense. He is also a national security contributor to CBS. Mike, welcome to the EWI podcast.
Cameron, it is great to be with you and great to talk to you again. And I'm really looking forward to this.
Okay, terrific. If you want more from Mike, you should note that he hosts his own podcast called Intelligence Matters, where he speaks with top leaders of the U.S. intelligence community and discusses their personal stories. So it's very kind of Mike to come over to our podcast. And today we have a lot to discuss because we'd like to talk about South Asia. Basically, the issue in South Asia that I see is that it's not talked about enough. There are enough crises in the world, such as China, Russia, Korea, that the issues which will be very important in the future, the relations of India to its neighbors, Pakistan and its ties with Afghanistan, the role of China in the region, are issues that are going to be very important into the future. So what I'd like to do is take a moment to hear from Mike how he sees the top issues in the region. What does he think are the things to keep an eye on? And what should we look forward to as hotspots in the short run and long-term trends? Mike?
So I think there's, you know, as I look at the world, it is one of the places where there are very important things happening today and will be happening into the future that affect our national security here at home. And you're absolutely right, it does not get enough attention. You know, an inbox can only handle so much, and there's only so many hours in a day. And whether it's the news media or think tanks or even the U.S. government, right, there's only so much bandwidth, and so it doesn't get the attention it deserves. So very important point. Should be more attention on it. But as I kind of step back and look at South Asia, I think there's some really important issues. So number one is stability in Afghanistan. It's something we've been working at since 9/11, and we're still working at it. And the reason it's so important is because if we don't get this right, then it can become a safe haven again for terrorists to pose a threat to the United States. And if that were to happen, then obviously all of the treasure and blood that we've spent there since 9/11 will be for naught. So it's absolutely important that we get this right, and the president made some important decisions about the road ahead there for the United States, which I support. And I think an important point to make here is it's not only about a security solution there, but it's about a political solution, right? So you can get the security right and get the politics wrong, and the security is going to become a problem down the road again. So very important that we get Afghanistan right. In terms of Pakistan, you know, obviously you know it exceptionally well. You know it better than I do. But the big issues there are how the Pakistanis play in relation to Afghanistan and stability there. That remains a problem. Their support to the Taliban for a variety of different reasons, but that makes them a player in the Afghan issue. And I think a solution to the Afghan issue requires a solution to the Pakistan issue vis-a-vis Afghanistan. And the way to do that, and I think you probably agree with this, Cameron, is that, you know, you don't do that by publicly shaming them, as has now happened, right? You do that by talking behind the scenes and putting pressure on them behind the scenes. So I think that's really important. The other big Pakistan issue for me is the long-term stability of that country. It's one of the things that I worry most about. I've sometimes referred to Pakistan as the most dangerous country in the world for that reason. As you know, the demographics there are quite frightening in terms of the birth rate, in terms of population growth, in terms of labor force growth. And the economy, as you know, is essentially stagnant and not producing anywhere near the number of new jobs for the entrance to the labor force. the growth of extremism in that kind of environment, right, is something we deeply need to worry about. The education system is broke. Pakistan actually spends more money on nuclear weapons than it does on education, so it tells you something about priorities there. I've always thought that the fact that the military basically has run the place has kind of warped Pakistani policy, because the military is making decisions that are in the best interests of the Pakistani military, not necessarily in the best interests of the Pakistani state. And I think, you know, a long-term solution to the stability worries in Pakistan is a greater role for the civilian government there. And then on India, it carries the potential to be a major power, not only in the region, but in the world. I think the sky's the limit for the Indians if they make the right decisions, if they interact in the world in the right way, if they fix some of their bureaucratic problems. They carry the potential to be a counterweight to China, and a positive counterweight to China. So a U.S.-Indian relationship, I think, is extraordinarily important. A strategic relationship is extraordinarily important. So that's kind of how I see the region from the big picture.
I think it's terrific. And, you know, in general, I definitely agree with the points you've made. That is to say that Afghan stability is key, that Pakistan also, both short-term and long-term, needs to be stable. I agree with the approach that talking quietly behind the scenes probably is more effective in getting Pakistan to change its behavior than doing this publicly. And then indeed, the same thing about India, that India can be an enormous player. What I wonder, though, based on my experience as ambassador and also since then, is whether or not the order in which you looked at these might be something that Americans and indeed other outsiders could rethink. That is, starting focused on Afghanistan, expanding to Pakistan, and expanding to India. And I'm not trying to read too much in the order, but I'm saying, I think that was the way that we have looked and has been the way that the United States has looked at the region. And when one looks at Pakistan, for example, through the lens of Afghanistan, the terrorism issue is overwhelming. But when you look at Pakistan's ability to become a stable, democratic state at peace with its neighbors, Afghanistan is one, but not the only issue. Those other demographic things that you talked about are important. And that's where the role of economic change might make a difference. And what is different now between the time I think you and I were working on this together and now is the role that China is beginning to play. So it's a long way of saying, is the interest that China has, the Belt and Road Initiative, the estimated $60 billion that's coming in from China, could this in fact be a stabilizing factor in helping the weak infrastructure of Pakistan, perhaps helping the society to become less volatile, give more jobs to younger people? Could this be a good thing, rather than being seen in simply a geopolitical sense as a power grab by China? How do you see the Belt and Road Initiative playing on that scenario that you outlined for us of Afghanistan, Pakistan,
and
India?
It's a very interesting observation, Cameron, on your part about the order. You're absolutely right. That's the way that we looked at it, right, when I sat in the Situation Room for 4 years as deputy director and acting director. That's the order we looked at it. And it's almost better to start at the other end, start with India and go the other direction, because the Indians are the ones that are on the right path here. And it's the Indians who ultimately the Pakistanis have to stop focusing on as a threat. I used to tell them, my Pakistani counterparts, you know, you guys are so focused on India as an existential threat. They're not an existential threat to you. They've moved on a long time ago. You guys are still overly focused on them, and your entire government and national security strategy is wrapped around something that at the end of the day is not a threat. And so you can actually go in the other direction, and it's a really interesting conversation if you do. In terms of the economics, I think that is absolutely critical to getting Pakistan and Afghanistan right. I don't think we spend enough time focusing on how do you bring economic development to Afghanistan, for example. I do think what the Chinese are doing is positive. I don't look at China as a threat. I look at China as a challenge that if we manage right, can become a cooperative partner in certain areas of the world. And if we get it wrong, it could become a threat. But I think there's way too many people, Cameron, who see China as a threat, and therefore everything they do in the world as necessarily having more downsides for the United States than upsides. But, you know, when I look at what they're doing in South Asia, I see it as a positive thing. Are they going to get more influence for themselves? Yes. But are they going to help the issue of stability in places like Pakistan and possibly Afghanistan? Yeah, I think it's a good thing. So I think it's very important to look at it from the perspective that you put on the table here.
Well, I'm glad you think that, because I'm still struggling with how that can happen. There are so many moving parts here. You mentioned, for example, the Pakistani, especially the military establishment's concern about India, which I think most analysts from the United States, myself included, would say is overblown. But India and Afghanistan do have a strong friendship, and part of the friendship is based on a mutual and reinforcing concern about Pakistan, if not suspicion. Do you have any ideas on how Pakistan might, you know, in the best of all worlds, might adjust its approach, or at least its public stance, so as to get away from that sense that you have a threat on the West and somehow a problem in the East, that Pakistan feels hemmed in? What would you advise the Pakistanis to do to try to get past this this impasse?
So as you know, Cameron, this is a tough issue, because in some ways, India as a threat is the whole defining concept of Pakistan as a nation. So it's a big challenge. You know, in my experience, and I'm sure in yours, there's only one way to overcome those kind of things, and that's dialogue. And there's not enough dialogue between Pakistan and India. And I think, you know, the more dialogue, the better. You know, I think we should be talking to the North Koreans. I think we should be talking to the Iranians. You know, a lot of conservatives would tell me I'm crazy, but I don't think you can move relationships forward that are stuck in mistrust without dialogue. And the more the better. And there's ways to start that dialogue that are politically acceptable in both countries, and there's ways not to do that. You know, I'd encourage the Pakistanis to talk to the Indians and the Indians to talk to the Pakistanis, and, you know, to start on the small issues and start coming to agreements, and then, you know, build over time to the bigger issues. I think that's the only way you do it. I don't think there's any other way.
You importantly noted that question of the sequence between small things to big things. You know, we've engaged on all sides, but very often both sides will raise the big issue, which is, of course, the future of Kashmir. As you know, the history of this is that there are UN resolutions back to the 1940s about Kashmir. There are the history of conflicts and wars from the 60s and 70s, 80s. A lot of bad blood, a lot of history. Would you say that the ideal way to approach Kashmir would be first for India and Pakistan to come to a series of, say, confidence-building measures and then take on the big issue? Or is there a newer creative issue that you think, or a creative way to go about Kashmir?
No, I think that's the tough issue. At the end of the day, that's the tough issue. That's the reason the Pakistanis support terrorist groups who are focused on the Kashmir problem and on India in general, and that's really tough. You know, you went through the history, and history's not pretty, and there's a lot of memories on both sides of that history. So I think that's the tough issue. I think that's going to have to wait for confidence, and exactly as you said, I would look for a series of confidence-building measures before you get to that tough issue.
Yeah, let's hope that those confidence-building measures can grow. They've been rather moribund, the low-level talks in recent years, but I think a lot of people, again, I'll put in a plug for East-West, we're always looking for ways in which we can try to find not only new ways to go at problems, but new constituencies, say the business constituency of India and the business constituency of Pakistan, people who may have different interests than traditional political groups. We hope that
the
militaries or even the intelligence agencies. There are ways that these people can talk that I think are very useful.
Cameron, you know, this might be a good place to say that these kind of getting over hurdles of distrust like we have here between India and Pakistan requires engagement on the part of the United States. The United States is often seen in the world as a bipartisan player here, right, who is an honest broker. And to the extent that we can appear that way as a government, and to the extent that we offer to lead, we can be a huge positive influence. And to the extent that we don't, it's a lost opportunity. And I think U.S. leadership in the world, which which is that question, at the moment, is vitally important to helping deal with issues like India and Pakistan.
That's right. And I think that we are engaged. I mean, even though there is a certain amount of skepticism based on kind of the style of the current administration, I think there are a lot of people who you and I know who work at the U.S. government, military, civilian, intelligence agencies, who are still engaged in, and we commend them that they're staying at it, but it really is necessary. Mike, I want to go back to a little bit to where we started, where we think about where the United States is paying a lot of attention because the lives of our soldiers are online and the commitment of 17 years is so important, and that's Afghanistan. How do you see things playing out? We just had a horrific couple of terrorist attempts there, attempts by the Taliban to sow confusion and probably to try to erode the support of the government there. What do you think is next in Afghanistan? What's your take on that country?
So it's a great question. It's not only the Taliban that has been conducting these horrific attacks in Kabul, it's also ISIS. So ISIS in Afghanistan has become a very serious problem. It's one of the places where the ISIS brand spread to, and the ISIS philosophy and how hardcore it is spread to, that's really caught on. And so it too is conducting, you know, attacks now in Kabul, and, you know, probably equal number of attacks in Kabul as to what the Taliban's doing. And they're both designed to show that the decision by the Trump administration to increase support to the Afghan government is not working and it's not going to work. It's their pushback on that. So I'm very concerned about where the Afghan problem is heading. You know, the Taliban, before the president made the decisions he made, controlled more territory in Afghanistan than at any time since 9/11. So it was on a roll. And, you know, I feared that if the United States were to leave, if the United States military and the coalition were to leave Afghanistan, that the Taliban would be knocking on the door of Kabul within 6 months. I mean, I thought it would fall that quickly. So I really think that our presence there is critically important. I think our support to the Afghan security forces is incredibly important, both in terms of training and in terms of close operational support. You know, being with them on the ground and giving them advice and assistance is incredibly important. And I think our own operations that we conduct there against both Al-Qaeda and ISIS is important to managing that problem. I think it's equally important that we help the Afghan government get the policy side of what they do right and the democracy side of what they do right. I think it's really important to focus on that, and I know that people from the State Department are doing that. So I think we're in a kind of tender situation here, and I think that it's going to take a lot of effort and it's going to take a long time for this to come out right. And so that's one of the reasons I supported the president saying, look, we're not going to put a time limit on this, right? We're going to stay as long as it takes. And I think that was a really important message to both the Afghan government and to the Taliban and Al-Qaeda and ISIS, that they couldn't just wait us out.
You know, two quick questions on that. One is, you and I watched as we spent many years, more than a decade and a half, working sincerely and we're spending a lot of money on trying to do the kinds of things you talked about, getting the day-to-day life of Pakistan to Afghanistan back to normal. For example, working on governance, working on rule of law, working on infrastructure development, making sure that people were trained and had jobs. You know, we were spending a lot of money for a lot of time. How do we do it better? Big, big, big question. If over the last 15 years, we haven't entirely succeeded. The second part of the question is, what do you think of the efforts of other people? You know, Russia is interested, neighbor Russia, Iran is interested. Do you see them as being able to play a positive role in the stability of the Afghan regime? Or do you think that they just make it more difficult? So the internal and the external issues.
Yeah, Cameron, I think they make it more difficult, right? I think their strategic interest in making it difficult for the United States to succeed in Afghanistan overcomes the Iranian interest for stability in Afghanistan and overcomes the Russian interest in managing the extremist problem on their continent. So, for example, U.S. commanders in Afghanistan have publicly stated in the last few months that the Russians are now providing support directly to the Taliban. And you ask yourself, well, why in the world would Vladimir Putin do that, right? Why would he provide support to an extremist group? And the answer is he wants to make life difficult for the United States, and that's the only reason he's doing it. And the Iranians act the same way. So I don't think they're a force for good in Afghanistan. I think both are, you know, a negative force.
So to break in briefly, Mike, so that there really is a difference between the potential that you mentioned for China potentially to play a positive role and what we see as the interpretation of what Iran and Russia are doing, a real difference. Is that, would you say that?
Yes, absolutely. And one of the interesting things about China, one of the things that has the potential to take the U.S.-China relationship in a more positive direction over time, and I base this on my own conversations with the Chinese over the years, is that I think there's more places in the world where our security interests with the Chinese overlap than actually where they're in conflict. So they're in conflict, right, in places like Taiwan, but they're actually in alignment in places like the Middle East and South Asia, where the Chinese have an interest in stability in South Asia. The Chinese have an interest in managing the extremist problem in South Asia. And so I think there's actually potential for us to work together if we were a little less distrustful of the Chinese. I really believe that. And so, yeah, absolute fundamental difference between the potential that China holds in the region to what the Russians and the Iranians are doing.
Thanks for that, Mike. And we can turn then to the internal issue.
I think you need both. I think that government-led development, traditional aid kind of development in building infrastructure, I think is very important to attracting the private sector. But ultimately, I think both are really important to creating jobs and giving people hope that their life's going to get better and their children's life's going to get better, and maybe they don't want the Taliban coming around.
And, you know, part of this is the idea that in order to get any of these countries to have a vibrant economy, that they have to work with one another. The broader question here is whether the, let's call it the forces of globalism, which have been buffeted by the winds of populism in recent years, whether that force of globalism and the opening up of markets is really the answer here, or whether we're looking at a time where the style of politics, with the discussion of protectionism and with the added talk about nationalism, whether that makes it more difficult. Are you optimistic about a global coming together of a business atmosphere that would allow for things to grow across borders, or do you think that the trend these days is against that?
So I'm not optimistic, but I'm not optimistic because of the forces of populism that you talked about, right? But I would say this, you know, the reason I think the private sector is so important is because the private sector at the end of the day doesn't care about the history and the historical problems and the mistrust that are deeply rooted. They care about their bottom line, and they're willing to look beyond all of that stuff. And they're willing to lobby their own governments to get the kind of policies that they need in these places to move forward. So that's why I think getting the private sector interested in places like Afghanistan and Pakistan is so important to somehow getting out of this stalemate that we're in.
I definitely agree, and I see that as part of a kind of a new diplomacy, which I hope that we can see that goes beyond what we would call the traditional Westphalian state-to-state ties, but involves other players, especially business interests, where, you know, people want to make a rupee, and so they will have people in Bangalore hiring people in Faisalabad and vice versa. Last question for you, Mike. What keeps you up at night about South Asia?
Oh, gosh. So that's a very interesting question. So when I was deputy director and acting director, and I gave public or semi-public speeches, I would always get asked that question, what keeps you up at night in general? And I felt as acting director or deputy director that I needed to give a national security answer, right? So I would always say terrorists with nuclear weapons. And that does concern me, right? I am worried about that. Terrorist groups have shown an interest in nuclear weapons. South Asia is a place where there are both terrorists and nuclear weapons. So, you know, I'm worried about that there. But as I really step back, Cameron, and think about where we are in the world, what I would tell you is the answer to that question is something that may not seem obvious to your listeners. And that is the thing I worry about the most is the inability of our political system here in the United States, the inability of our politicians to come together and make decisions that advance our own society and economy, that strengthen us as a nation, that give us the ability and the confidence to be a leader in the world, to be a leader in a place like South Asia. That's what worries me. That's what really worries me about the whole future of the world and our leadership role in it, that we can't get our own house in order. And if we can't do that, then we're not going to be able to lead. And if we're not going to be able to lead, then there's going to be a lot of vacuums, including in places like South Asia.
Well, that really underscores the interconnectedness of these issues, where in the past, people might have been able to draw a distinction between what happens in America and what happens on the outside. But what you've just said underscores in a very stark manner the sense that what happens inside the United States will have a big impact on such places as South Asia, where indeed the need for stability is important. So I think that's very important to keep in mind. And I think that our listeners will be very much sobered and yet, I think, enlightened by what you've just said. So, Mike, once again, I want to thank you for being with us. I want to remind everyone who's listening to this that for more from Mike, his own podcast called Intelligence Matters allows you to go into many of these issues in greater depth in his discussions with the intelligence community, and that we at East West Institute want to once again thank Mike Morrell for being with us today on this podcast. Thank you very much, Mike.
You're welcome, Cameron. It was great to be with you.